Welcome to another episode of Backlash Podcast. This week we are going to talk to Rich Reinert, and of course, because we're getting close to the Wisconsin Muskie Expo, we do need to talk about the Muskie Expo, but then we have also some topics that may or may not help you catch more fish this year. Oddly enough, we are going to talk about stocking a little bit and the importance of stocking and funding and things like that with it. It's not a DNR bass session by any means. It's just us talking about, you know, things that we need to consider moving forward as we, you know, try to preserve the future of musky fishing. So that's kind of what we talk about this week. Like I said, there's some nuggets of information out of Rich that'll be good. I mean, he's been musky fishing for 55 years, so he's got some stories to tell. And speaking of musky expos, when you're hearing this podcast, we are just days away from the Minnesota Musky Expo. So come out and see us March 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Warner Coliseum at the State Fairgrounds in Minneapolis. And that's where we will be. And we are going to have a live podcast out of the Musky Mayhem Tackle Booth on Friday night. That'd be March 8th, if my math is correct. And I think we go to like 8:30, don't we, Brad? Is that the story in Minnesota when 8:30 start or 8:30 end time on Friday, which means we should probably start at like 7:15, 7:30-ish in your booth?
That is correct, yep. And I'm hoping that a bunch of listeners will be there with a bunch of questions. You know, I don't know who the group will be that when we do the roundtable side of things, but we will gather some pretty good intuitive guides that will share a bunch of things. But ultimately, we want the listeners to come and ask some questions specifically at that recording. I think it's always fun to have them interact. Don't be nervous. I mean, I'll hand you the mic. You can ask your question. We move on. So get out there and participate. This is your chance to do that.
I think as long as Kerry gets can coolers done, I think we mentioned this before, you can potentially get yourself a Backlash Podcast can cooler by showing up at the Minnesota Muskie Expo on Friday night to talk on our podcast. Brad, I know we didn't talk about this really since we got done with it, but we're going to maybe try to do a Facebook Live and see if we can't get the audio to be a little bit better, because I would say if we're grading our Facebook Live from the Milwaukee show, I think it's an F, right? Probably about right.
I would say it's probably an F. And as we were reading the comments one after another, and it's kind of hard to answer some of those comments as you're trying to do a podcast at the same time. But yes, our audio was graded as an F. Let's just say that. But I think we got a couple tricks up our sleeve, and hopefully that'll work out good, Jeff. So I will be bringing a couple little items that we can connect to your phone and hopefully make that a little bit better for the listener.
That would be fantastic if we can do that. If we can't, then that'll be the end of it. No more Facebook Living for podcasts. Hang tight and listen to it on Wednesday, and you can hear the recording of everything we talked about. Because that was the one comment we kept getting, like, your mics aren't working. And I'm like, but my mic is definitely working what I need it to work as. I needed to record a podcast to get out on Wednesday. And I could definitely hear that the mics were perfectly great for that. Obviously, the listeners at home or viewers at home, they weren't getting the same experience. So we'll try to fix that a little bit. And if we don't, then that might just be something we scrap, because obviously your audio at the shows is difficult because you have all the background noise.
Audio has always been my nemesis. I will say the last year or so with Mayhem Sends Isles and Casts, I finally got through some of that, Jeff. But now we're going to battle a new audio problem, right? So Hopefully we can get that done.
Yeah. I got you set out on a different task. You fixed the one though, Brad. I will say that. Like, I use the same microphone that you use. The thing is spot on. It's awesome.
That truly is incredible. That's for sure. And especially when there's background noise. So I'm hoping that we can make that work.
All right. And then as I mentioned in a previous episode, if you're looking for DK lures, we will have a handful of them, more than a handful. And I think we're going to limit it one per person. So if you're there on Friday, make sure you check out DK lures. That's definitely something you want to look at. And of course, I don't want to leave out all the other awesome manufacturers that we carry over at Team Rhino Outdoors. We have piles and piles of the best brands in musky fishing, 50 feet of it at that show. It's actually more because we like to run one side and then we build this nice little wall in the middle and we add even more stuff in there. So I would say there probably isn't a booth that jams more stuff in it in 50 feet than we do. So check us out at the Minnesota show. Brad, what do you got going on at Minnesota? You got anything special that you're bringing to the show that you haven't had before, or something you reloaded on? What's going on in Minnesota?
Well, the first thing I want to say is I think there's still some confusion out there. I mean, we've been doing this for 19 years. We've went to the shows where we tie customs right at the show. So I'm telling everybody right now, because it just kind of dumbfounds me when I say, well, we can build that for you. And they look at you like, what? We literally tie customs right at the show. So you come with your skirt colors, you come with your blade colors, and we will build it right there. Usually takes somewhere between 3 and 5 minutes. And every once in a while, there might be a little bit of a backup, but honestly, it's quick turnaround. So come with your custom color ideas. And then, you know, we introduced the Monster grenade this year, and they will be available. And then as well as the Haiti grenades. So we have them in a regular size as well as a mini. Those are all one-up customs. They will be hanging there. They kind of go pretty fast at most of the shows. So definitely want to check them out if you're interested in one of those.
And I'll try to give you a reminder to not forget about the Wisconsin Muskie Expo. That's the 15th, 16th, and 17th of March. And that'll be the weekend after the Minnesota show. And I would hope to see many people out at that show as well. That's it. That's the final straw or nail in the coffin or whatever for show season. As fast as it came, it's gone. And so stop out and see us at the Wisconsin Muskie Expo. I'll try to put up a reminder before the live show and get that rolling so people can get a reminder to come out and see us, because that'll be the week. You'll hear the Minnesota live show. And then that following weekend, we have the Wisconsin Muskie Expo. And of course, if you're looking for gear all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, visit TeamRhinoOutdoors.com. You can find us there with everything. You know, I don't want anybody to forget rods and reels. It's nets, bigger items, bigger ticket items. Everybody knows us for custom colored lures, but now you should know us for rods, reels, and nets and tackle boxes and all that kind of stuff. We're working feverishly towards being the one-stop muskie shop that all of you would hope that we will be. And it takes a while. There's some hurdles to overcome, but we're working on it, and we're getting some more stuff done. So if you're gearing up for your next muskie fishing adventures this season, you need a new rod, St. Croix, Fenwick, Chaos Tackle, working on a couple other ones yet too, you know, check us out there. Same thing with reels. We have pretty much the most of the major brands. Penn Reels was one I used last fall. The Penn Fathom 2, I loved it. It was awesome. Great reel. I'm looking forward to breaking them out again this spring. So do that. And then Brad, if they are looking for the best of big bladed flashaboo musky bucktails, they got to make sure you check out muskymayhemtackle.com. And of course, you know, make sure you come out and support Brad and Carrie at the Minnesota show. That's your last opportunity to see them. They will not be in Wisconsin. So if you want a chance to see Brad's smiling face, you want an autograph from him or Carrie, get out there and check it out at the show.
The other thing too, Jeff, I know I've had a couple people reach out to me. They're very intrigued about the Baheel sunglasses. And I know I spoke to a few people at the Milwaukee show. I think a couple of them are going to come full circle and check out some of those in your booth as well. So definitely a brand to look at. And then the other thing that you're doing, and this is one of our sponsors with the TV show, is you're doing the AFCO jackets as well as the AFCO sweatshirts. And I know that's been a really popular one as well.
Yeah, and we should be, I know that, you know, we're a little early on this one because we're recording it early. In fact, you know, tomorrow's episode's not even out yet, but we should have, I would imagine we'll have a shipment of AFCO stuff coming in late this week, so it should definitely make it in time, I would assume, for the Minnesota show, so we should be restocked for that show, and then I ordered enough to make sure that we have plenty for the Wisconsin Muskie Expo as well, and then we'll reload those back on the website also. And like you said, Brad, the AFCO has definitely been that shadow hoodie. It's probably been our most popular hoodie for the course of the shows and online this winter. So definitely check that out. I appreciate you talking about that, Brad. And yeah, I think Baheel may have a booth at the Minnesota show. I think I know that I actually just missed a call from Jeff from Baheel. And so we're going to you might be able to go to their booth, check it out, and then come to our booth and buy it. I'm assuming that's how that works, but I'm not exactly positive. So definitely something for you to check out at the Minnesota show. And with that said, Brad, I think we just go right into our conversation that we had with Rich. All right, our guest this week is Rich Reinert. And Rich, we did this podcast like about a year ago, but we're gonna add a little twist because you not only are the operator of the Wisconsin Muskie Expo, but you're also a fishing guide, or you were a fishing guide, and you get on the water a lot. And you got 55 years of muskie knowledge for us to tap into. So we're gonna talk about the show first, and then we're gonna dive into some, you know, muskie fishing information that hopefully help people catch more fish. So Rich, first off, I want to say thank you for taking time out of your schedule on this beautiful day. For anybody that cares, I think it's like the 26th or 27th of February. It's a 60 degree day, a Tuesday before the Minnesota show. and we're trying to get some stuff out of the way because, of course, next week we're going to be on the road. And so when you're hearing this, we will have probably just returned. Or no, you're hearing this, we're going to be just leaving for the Minnesota show. So anyways, Rich, I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule. And I'm sure you'd much rather be sitting outside on the deck drinking a cold beverage in the sun than talking muskies with us.
Actually, you know, Jeff, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for, you know, for having me. I think you're right. I'm kind of blown away with the weather. You know, you talk about the weather we're having right now. This is definitely a lot more intense. You know, I'm really big on keeping track of weather. And the last time we had mild weather like this was back in 2004. And though we did not have the temperatures that we're having, it was very similar, but it's more intense now. It's definitely, I mean, this is not right, you know, that it's damn near 70 degrees and we're sitting out here and it's summer-like weather.
Yeah. My son asked me if he could wear shorts to school today. I said, sure. How often do you legitimately get to wear shorts to school in February? So yeah, might as well test it out, right? New water's here.
Exactly. So how you doing there? Yeah, Brad.
We're doing good, man. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you. So, anyways, you know, it's funny. You go to these Muskie Expos right now, and everybody's chomping at the bit. I think it was last week I was at Milwaukee Muskie Expo for the day on Saturday, and it was the same thing. That, you know, there was windier and there was a cool bite to the air, but it was still a fairly decent day out there, and you know, but it was good to, you know, be around a bunch of, you know, musky people and talk muskies. They sure kept me busy, you know, for that day. That's for sure, you know.
Yeah, well, the next couple weeks here, for me, going to be in Minnesota, and then we're going to be at your expo. You know, it's going to be musky talk nonstop for the next couple weeks. But, you know, Rich, let's dive into that. For people that want to know more about your expo, where can they find out more about it? When is it? What can they expect when they come out to see a show?
Well, the show, this is the 15th year that the show's been in existence. And of course, I don't think we can grow it any more than what it is. You know, there's different talk. Everybody's, you know, it's marketing talking about we got the biggest show and you know, or we've got, you know, the whatever, the most exhibitors, but we've got 84 exhibitors, okay, that will be at the Wisconsin Muskie Expo March 15th through the 17th. You know, we started this show basically to give a lot of different manufacturers a platform. And it's kind of taken off from there. And people seem to like it. It's going to be at the Central Wisconsin Convention and Expo Center in Rothschild, where it's always been. And, you know, we've got a line of speakers that are probably different or maybe not so different these days. I've noticed, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but, you know, I've been doing this a very, very long time. And, you know, back in the day, you know, Al Lindner and you had Ted Capra and you had, you know, Tony Rizzo and you had all these names that were, you know, within the industry and, you know, that stood out. And I at my point in my life, I'm seeing it change. Like, you know, who's going to be the new faces, you know, of the musky world? Do you guys ever stop and think about that or look at that?
Yeah, I mean, I think about it pretty often, actually. It's weird, I would say. Like, you talk about the old guides and the legend and everything that goes with them, you know, much like, you know, sports, for example. I talk about it right now. Like, everybody wants to anoint Jordan Love a Hall of Fame quarterback. And I'm like, well, realistically, how many of them that are playing right now are actually Hall of Fame quarterbacks? It's very few. And yeah, I look at it that way with guides. There's so many of them right now. How many of them do you suppose are going to be that true legend, the ones that my kids talk about or look up to or whatever? I mean, do you suppose there's a whole bunch of them or not many of them at all?
I don't. I see a lot of younger people coming into this right now, and I'm not trying to take anything away from anybody, but I think that there are some people coming into this, and especially they're coming in very early in the game. They've been fishing muskies for 4, 5, 6, maybe 10 years, and all of a sudden they've kind of put themselves into a legendary status in their mind. You know what I mean? You know, again, I'm not, you know, pointing any fingers at any one person, but I've noticed a lot of newer guys seem to think that they have all the answers. And I guess I'm from the old school. I mean, I when I look at a guy like Tony Rizzo, when I first started guiding, when you look at that era, you know, you had Fishing Facts magazine, you had In Fisherman in its prime, and you had guys like, you know, Al and Ron Lindner, you had Carl Maltz, you had Spence Petros, you had Joe Bucher in his younger days. You know, I kind of fall into that same category. You know, I think Joe's probably, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years older than I am. And, you know, it kind of, there were certain people that stood out. You know, I remember when Brad, you know, it was started guiding, and look at the impact he had with Muskie Mayhem. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, to me, Brad was the face of Minnesota. You know, a guy like Noah Binfield is a face of Minnesota right now. But when I look at, like you had mentioned, there's so many young guys out there. I don't know. It just isn't quite the same. There's so many out there that, you know, when I look at some of the guys that, the younger guys coming on, I think guys like Michael Hansen, Taylor Flannery stand out. Brian Schaefer. I mean, in my mind, Brian is one of the finest muskie guides, muskie fishermen in, you know, the state of Wisconsin. And, but then on the other hand, there's some older guys, you know, and I'm mentioning this, and these are some of the speakers that we're having at the show. You know, when I look at a guy like Tom Harrison, and I don't know if you've ever heard of Tom Harrison before, you know, Jeff, but he was kind of one of those real quiet, nobody knew, he didn't talk much. But of any fisherman that I know of in the state of Wisconsin, let's exclude Green Bay. Let's exclude people going to Lake St. Clair. Let's talk about inland water muskie fishing. I don't know of any man that's got more 50-inchers in the state of Wisconsin than Tom Harrison. I know in one season alone, he had six 50-inchers. You just didn't hear about it. And I think there's a lot of guys, you know, in the state of Wisconsin that are like that, that are just real low-key, real quiet. And we just don't hear about them. But it's just, you know, starting this, it was like when you look at, you know, who are the people that muskie fishermen are going to look up to or look to for, you know, for information. You know, one of the guys I think that is strongest in my mind is Michael Hansen. Really. I mean, the guy is impressive. You know, he's fishing in the Hayward area, and he's putting fish in the boat that a lot of guys basically have said that just aren't there. And yet he's always putting them in the boat. And that guy, he's one of the hardest fishermen, that I've seen. And come December, he fished till the last day in the 31st of December. And I think within the few days before that, he put a 49-incher in the boat. So, you know, those are the kind of guys that we reach for, you know, to have speak. And it's constantly in my mind. I mean, you know, who are going to be the people? I mean, look at Brian Klein, you know, on Green Bay. I mean, I think he's kind of a nomadic guide, but, you know, I think he's another one that, you know, is a tremendous fisherman, but he's not exactly loud. He's not in the presence, you know, of the social media today. So,
well, I don't know. The other thing I could ask you is, do you suppose that most of these guides are going to be fishing in 20, 30 years, like a Dick Pearson, a Mike Lazarus, you, for example? You know, are those guys going to be out there fishing for 20 years? That's what's going to truly define whether or not those guys are legends in the sports, is longevity and consistency.
I agree with that. You know, the first time I heard something like that, I had a dealer that had made that comment to me, and it embarrassed me to no end. You know, look, you know, I mean, in the last 55 years, I've been very fortunate. You know, I started guiding, you know, under the tutelage of Tony Rizzo. Tony gave me his overload. And so I didn't have a horn to blow loud, because, you know, I was able to organically build a guide service, you know, because of Tony Rizzo. And, you know, I look now at that, I'm very honored that Tony thought enough of me to pass on that overload, because of course, you know, what you do reflects on someone like that. And, you know, it's amazing to me that some of these younger people today don't even know who Tony Rizzo is. And it wasn't just, but, a few years back that he passed away, you know, so it kind of blows my mind. So when I look at this new generation, you know, it's getting harder for me to pick out speakers, and I'm not going to go on forever, you know, speaking at, you know, at shows and stuff like that. It's, as you well know, some of the health issues I have, Jeff, you know, it's getting harder. I mean, you and I talked on Saturday at the Milwaukee Muskie Expo, and I was shocked. I mean, I had had enough, you know, and it just gets rougher. And then you got a guy like Mike Keys, and Mike and I are very much, I think, the same age bracket, and that guy has got, you know, as much energy as a jalapeno pepper, you know, I mean, he bounces around, you know, tirelessly, you know what I mean? And so it's just, you know, this year was one of the toughest years I had in picking out speakers for the show. And, you know, when I got done with it, I had to really think long and hard. Being like on Friday, you know, starting at 3 p.m., I do have Taylor Flannery opening the doors. And then at 4:30, I've got Michael Hansen. I've got 6 p.m. I've got Brian Schaefer and Dan Gropengeiser. Saturday, I've got Tom Harrison. I was actually, he's 72 years old, and that's a seminar that I don't think anybody should miss, because the guy is a wealth of knowledge, and yet nobody knows who he is. But I'm here to tell you, he's probably one of the finer musky fishermen in the state of Wisconsin, you know, who fishes inland waters where most of the average people fish, you know. Then, of course, at 12 o'clock, myself is speaking. 2 p.m., we've got Dave Birch. And that's a name that a lot of people don't know. But Dave Birch was the man that innovated Superline back more than 30 years ago. He was the man that brought spider wire to the market. And, you know, I think one of the things that I see today is everybody bases the quality of fishing on the dollars of what equipment cost. I mean, if you would have told me that reels would have cost, you know, $400, you know, 20 years ago, I'd look at you like you were crazy, you know? And I mean, we used to fish with 5,500 C's and 6,500 C Ambassador round reels, and they did just fine. And there's nothing wrong with those reels. But today, you know, if you don't have a $400 reel, it seems like you're not fishing. You know, rods, $300, $350, $400 for a rod. And the one thing, you know, guys will spend $800 on an outfit. They'll spend money, $50, $60, you know, $100 on a bait, you know, and yet they look for the cheapest line they can buy. And that blows me away, because that is the only terminal connection you've got between you, that fish, and that $50 bait that you're throwing. And, you know, there's a lot of good braids on the market. I will tell you this, that I think your listeners will find interesting. You know, you watch all these comments on Facebook, you know, what's your favorite line? You know, what do you use and what works? I'm here to tell you right now that people need to be woke up and educated. First of all, a lot of the lines on the marketplace today are made between either three manufacturers in the States and or in China. So, you know, when you look at a lot of braids in the market, you say there's 20, 30 braids on the market, and you're thinking they're all individual companies, are actually made by just a handful of manufacturers, really. So they need to be aware of that. And it's kind of funny, because when I watch people say, well, I don't like this line or I don't like that line, and the fact of it is they're all made in the same factory. That's what, you know, I scratch my head at. But nevertheless, what's important is to using, you know, a good, you know, braid. And it's amazing to me that, you know, there are fishermen that are looking for the cheapest price and not necessarily the quality of the line, you know, regardless of what brand they're using. So Dave Birch was the man that basically was very innovative and basically started, you know, innovating the braids. Braids not new. You know, they used to braid, you know, Dacron, they, you know, cloth, you know, silk, you know, but to braid PE or polyethylene, you know, this was the man that did it. This is the man that a lot of people in this industry go to for technical questions. So he is speaking at 2 o'clock, and even myself, I am going to be sitting in that seminar, because if there's somebody that has an answer to something, you know, it comes to making brave, this is the man to listen to. And then at 4 o'clock, we got Steve Jonas. And I think everybody is aware of who Steve Jonas is. He's been around a long time. He's an old timer. And then on Sunday, we've got Jeff Van Remortel speaking at 10 a.m. And Jeff needs no introduction to the Muskie world. And then, of course, then you've got Mike Keyes at 12 o'clock. So that's our speaker lineup for the show. I mean, how's that sound to you, Jeff?
It sounds like you got all your bases covered. You know, Brad, I'm gonna get you in here in 1 second. So I heard Rich say something in there. He was talking about old reels, old rods, shorter rods, 6500s. Do you have much of that stuff available to you yet, Brad? You still have those things around?
Well, I'm still a round reel guy. And so, you know, I go back to the TEs. That was my go-to reel forever. I still use them today. Shimano kind of followed suit with the Conquest, and now this last year, the Conquest MD. And it's a round reel. And they made that base so it sits a little lower on the rod. Super, super comfortable and smooth. I have some tranks in my mix, but honestly, I mean, when you're talking reels, I like round reels. So the Conquest MD is the newer version. It's expensive, but man, I really, truly love it at this point. Rods and reels definitely make your life easier, right? So as far as rods, I'm working with St. Croix, and the cool thing is that I'm on some of their prototyping side of things. So the last 3 years, we've spent a ton of time prototyping some of their rods. And we're exploring different avenues with them. So, you know, to mix in different lengths of rods, absolutely. I mean, I still mix in a few different size rods throughout, depending on what I'm fishing.
Well, what I want to do is I actually want to know, do you have an Abu Garcia 6500 C3 or C4 or whatever? Do you have one of those around?
I think there's a C4 sitting. I'm at the bar of our kitchen here in the house. And I believe there's an old C4 sitting over here by the window.
So what I want you to do is I want you to take that C4 and I want you to take like a 6'6" or 7-foot rod. And I want you and Chase to film an episode where all you guys use is the stuff from 20 years ago.
Well, I could go back. Yeah, we could do that. It would be interesting to do. I honestly, over the years, have given away all my C3s and C4s to youth, getting people started in the sport. So, you know, old rods and things like that, I've always just handed down. You know, you get a young person that's around here at the shop, or might be family, might be friends, might be whatever, but I've handed off a ton of these. I could probably locate a few more if I dug around. That would be a cool show. There's no question about it. And I even have some rods that are probably 50 years old that are laying around here, you know, that I've just kept them. That would be a really cool show.
Yeah, go steal them from those kids. Like, just say, hey, sorry, kid, I don't care. Yeah. I want that back. Like, here it is. This is how it's going to go. And I want to see you guys film a show. It'd be interesting, you know, because we never use that stuff. We only go better and we only go forward. So there's no real reason to go back permanently. But it would be fun to watch you guys essentially struggle or deal with the struggles of, you know, that some of the anglers back in the day had to deal with. You can still use braided lines. I'll let you use that because you might lose too many fish. But I'd like to see you guys go to all that older gear once, just for an episode, just to see how it plays out. It'd be interesting.
It really would be interesting, right? I mean, think about some of those reels and how much line they picked up. So, you know, if you are counting on speed to get your bait into the boat faster and, you know, get those active bites, things would be a little challenging, and I think there'd be a little few more aches and pains.
Yeah, well, these are things I think of when people make comments. And so Rich is talking about all that old stuff, and I'm like, man, that'd be really fun to watch somebody just, you know, struggle with the older stuff, you know? So there you go. I gave you an idea. Now, by the time you actually implement it, 6 other YouTubers will listen to this and they'll have implemented it already. But it would still be interesting to see an episode of that kind of stuff.
You said you got a C6500 within reach. I've got a Fluger Supreme. You know, that's one of the very first reels I started fishing with. You know, that definitely goes to show my age. And you're right. You know, there's no doubt about it, Jeff. I think 6-footers, I think are, you know, it'll beat you to death, you know, but in the case of some kids or, you know, some women, it might work. I've kind of settled on 7.9 and 7.11 for my rods. I fish low to the water. So I think the biggest thing is when you choose equipment, you know, you got to take in consideration the boat you're fishing out of. And just like equipment, boats have gotten bigger. I mean, you fish out of these big Rangers today with some of these people, and you feel like you're stepping into the Titanic. You know, I still fish out of a Tuffy Esox Magnum where I'm low to the water. And what you had just brought up, you know, Jeff, I had a couple people in my boat last year that, you know, were a bit, you know, taken in with the newer equipment, the longer rods, the bigger reels. And I watched them beat themselves to death in my boat. And when I offered my rods to them, they couldn't believe how much easier, how nicer it felt, you know, and more control they had out of fishing a slightly shorter rod. So I think the biggest thing, you know, what I see, you know, being like yourself, Brad, I've been involved with a lot of rod companies and doing some private, you know, consultation work with, you know, different companies, you know, on their rods. You know, what I see is some of the blanks that are being, you know, the rods are being built on today are basically blanks that are used for tarpon fishing in Florida. And so you're basically taking a blank that is being used for a fish that runs anywhere from 70 to 125 pounds, and you're initiating that same blank, you know, up here, you know, fishing for a fish that averaged 36 to 40 inches. And if you're in inland water, if you get a 45 incher, why, you know, you're doing good. Now, that being said, there's a lot of guys going to Lake St. Clair fishing on those bigger boats. You know, Green Bay and those longer rods have their place to where you're not bending over and you know, when you're trying to figure eight and stuff like that. So it's just, it's amazing how much the industry's changed, you know, compared to what it was to what it is today. So it's interesting when you look at it in my, you know, like in my view, I shake my head, even with the size of the baits we fish with. I mean, when you look at Lake Vermilion, for instance, we were at Vermilion Dam Lodge, and you have a main beam that goes across in the lodge of all the baits that caught 50-inch fish. Most of the baits, the majority of the fish were all under 9 inches and under. They caught the biggest fish on Lake Vermilion, which was considered like the trophy fishery in the Midwest, you know? So it was just kind of interesting, you know, as to where musky fishermen are going with all this today, you know? So anyways, it's just, you know, the show, there's a lot there, as Jeff can say. You know, when I go to Jeff's booth, I love walking in there because, you know, you've got so much eye candy in that thing, you know, that you don't normally get to see in the store shelves, you know, out in the market, that it's always a good time, you know, walking through your booth. And, you know, where you leave off, John Carlson picks up and, you know, fills in with the favorites that, you know, that are out there. So both of you, you know, both retailers are, you know, you're a nice addition to the show. You know what I mean? That's the biggest thing we've got. And then, of course, we've got a lot of, you know, smaller cottage companies, and that's what we're known for. And there's plenty of that there this year. So, matter of fact, one of the baits that a lot of people have been looking for, it is called a pedigree, and it's made by Conklin Lures. And I don't know, he inquired about a booth this year, so he'll have a booth this year. So people will have a place to get their glitches and pedigrees. So that was a nice addition this year. There's several new, you know, companies on the floor this year, and I'm sure, Jeff, you'll be checking their stuff out. You're always on top of it as to what's new out there.
Yeah, I generally take a walk around and see what we can see if there's any holes that we need to fill. And shows are a good time for me to be able to do that. Typically, you know, I'd say over the course of show season, we pick up anywhere from 1 to 6 different companies potentially. And as far as I know, this year we've already done 1 or 2. So there'll be some new stuff coming, as always, like you mentioned, Rich. I mean, we try to bring out the best of all the brands and try to fill holes that aren't necessarily there, you know, in this at your show, because it doesn't work out with Musky Mayhem Tackle. If you're looking for Musky Mayhem Tackle, I'm thinking we're probably one of the only ones there. Brad, you'd know better than I would. I'm thinking we've got to be one of the only ones at the show that are going to have your stuff.
That's a great question. I'm not even sure because I don't know what other stores are there, but you probably are. And it's nice to have you there supporting us in that matter. So it definitely, I mean, we've always tried to work with all the retailers because we believe that we're kind of old school that way. We're not always looking at direct sales. We want to help our retailers and you're one of them. So it's awesome.
Say, you know what, Jeff, you do a great job of, you know, I'll tell you right now, there is one bait, and Brad knows this. I stopped by his booth last week at Milwaukee. You know, earlier we were talking about baits, one of the, you know, three baits you would have in your boat. And, you know, as you both know, I make my own bucktail. It's called an ambush. And because of my health, I passed that company got passed on to another manufacturer who is now making it and doing a great job. But, you know, regardless whether you make a bait yourself, one of the baits that, you know, that I think is really important to have in my boat is, Brad, you guys make it's called a rabid girl, and it's got real short tinsel on it. Almost like a slimline bucktail. And I'm going to tell you, that is one bait that I think everybody should have in their boat, especially when it comes to shallow water work. It's, you know, regardless whether it's bucktails or gliders or minnow baits or whatever it is that you're using, that is one bucktail that, as far as when it comes to shallow water work, that is the bait that I use. And I think everybody should have those in their boat. That's an awesome bait, Brad.
I appreciate that. It is a unique bait, and it's basically based off of the rabid squirrel line, right? The old squirrel tails, they're short, they're streamlined, like you said. The cool thing is that we just kind of put a twist on it and started using flashaboo. So basically the same bait. Flashaboo does make a different noise in the water. So another concept that came together, and I appreciate you coming out and saying that.
Well, it is a great bait. And I think, you know, the first thing, you know, being that you were at the show, you didn't have them there. I think it's an important bait in the state of Wisconsin because we do fish a lot of shallow, you know, flowages, you know, in the state. And it's a bait that is, you know, I definitely always. When I buy one of those, and I think Jeff can, you know, he can verify this. I don't ever buy one. When I buy those, I buy 3, 4, 5, 6 at a crack when I usually get them, because within the season, I'm going to tear it up. It amazes me that how many musky fishermen buy musky lures, especially suic, and they'll sit there and they'll have a suic, and they say, yep, this bait's 20 years old. I can't make a suic last 20 years. I'm lucky if I can get a suic, if we're fishing suics a lot, if I can get it to last a season. That's just the nature of the beast. But they work well. It's the same thing with that rabid girl. You know, they're not going to last forever if you're catching fish on them. So they constantly need to be replaced. And it's one of those baits that I think should be a standard for shallow water tails in everybody's box. And that's the truth, you know. So, I mean, Jeff, how many of those have I bought from you?
I'd say, I don't know, 10 of them maybe the last handful of years. I probably bring 4, 5, 6 of them to a show, I'd say.
Exactly. Every year, because we tear them up. We bust them up on fish. But I don't know how well they sell, and I don't know how many people really realize that bait is out there, but it's definitely a bait they should know about, you know? It's just a good bucktail. That would definitely be a bait that I think a lot of people should look for, you know, at the show. So, hint, Jeff.
well, Brad, you know, we talked about that order, whether or not you need to ship that or not. If I'm going to be bringing those to the show, you better ship that order.
Yeah, I know that there's some on that order. So, yeah, for sure.
Well, I'm definitely going to be in that booth. I went right to Jeff right away at Milwaukee, and I looked for him right away. I mean, that's just, for shallow water works, you can't beat that bait. And I know it catches some little decent fish, and the guys are starting to catch on to it. I've told many, and I know other people have ordered from Jeff. I mean, Jeff has probably got one of the best supplies of those that I know of, you know, in any place, you know, out there in the market. So, yeah, he definitely carries a wide selection. So,
All right. Well, Rich, before we move on to some other topics, let's talk a little bit about the show quickly. Let's run down location, dates, and if people want to learn more about it, how can they go about doing that? And then let's talk some fishing stuff for this year.
You bet. Yeah, the show is, as always, is at the Central Wisconsin Convention and Expo Center in Rothschild. The dates on the show are March 15th through the 17th. The show doors, the show opens up at 2 o'clock, you know, on Friday, and it goes till 8 o'clock that evening. Saturdays, the doors open back up at 9 a.m. in the morning, and it goes till 6 o'clock. And then right after, there'll be a lure swap that is hosted by the Wausau Area Chapter of Muskies, Inc., and they'll have pizzas available, and it's turned out to be a pretty big event. It's amazing how many people come out, and people enjoy that. So, and then, of course, Sunday, the show opens up at 9 a.m., and it runs till 3 p.m. So if they want more information, they can go to www.wimuskyexpo.com. And they'll find more information there. But it's amazing. I still brought as much money as we spent advertising and you know, everything from Mike Keyes Outdoors, podcasts like this, you know, print, Wisconsin Outdoor News, Muskie Magazine, radios all over the state of Wisconsin are playing this. It is amazing how some people are still finding out about that show. It just totally perplexes me. There must be a lot of rocks in Wisconsin. That's all I can say. And people live there because, you know, I just look at the dollars we spend, you know, in advertising, and there are people they don't know. They don't have a clue. Yeah. I mean, we put out flyers everywhere, and we start that come August at different various tournaments. And then, of course, they're put into retail shops. But we, you know, we're on our 15th year. It grows. We're as big as we're going to get. I don't want it to be any bigger. I think the main key thing is, I think if people take the time to walk and visit each of booths and check out what they have, and there's so many people that run in, they buy a handful of baits and run back out again, and then they wonder what, you know, they go, well, that didn't look so big. Well, take some time, walk up and down the aisles. I mean, Jeff, you've been there plenty. I mean, it always amazes me as to how much musky tackle we actually pack into that place.
It amazes me how much musky tackle I pack into my 150-foot booth alone, and we're just a small portion of that entire show. So, yeah, there's a crazy amount there.
You know, I mean, when you think about it, there's 84 vendors, okay? And like you've got 5 booths. Sean's got 5 booths. You know, Chaos Tackle, they've got 4 booths. So when you start looking at it that way, and all of a sudden you got 84 vendors, there's a lot to look at, a lot to see. The thing that impresses me, you know, people don't see the other side of this. What they don't see is when you will take, I've watched you, you'll take a look at a new bait, you know, on the floor, and Saturday night, you're in the swimming pool testing baits because you want to see what those baits do. And you're checking out, you know, the quality and giving your insight to all these companies. I mean, those are the things that people don't get to see at that show, you know, and you do that every year. I watch you from the hotel room. I can see you down there testing baits. I find that quite interesting. You know,
Every show of yours, probably we do that for sure. But Brad, we did a fair amount of testing at the last show in Milwaukee, didn't we? We probably spent, what, hour and a half throwing different stuff in the pool?
Yeah, until Hitler came and shut you down.
I knew that was coming. All right, boys, enough of the fishing rod.
It was funny, you know. When there's nobody in the pool and you have that opportunity, you're going to take it. And yeah. Sometimes we'll get shut down with that, but that's all right.
Yeah, we got some cool new stuff that we got to play around with. A couple things that we can't quite talk about just yet, but when we're ready to talk about it, you'll know about it loud and proud. Brad, you've already seen it. You got to play with it, so we got some good stuff coming.
Well, I'm actually hoping that Chase and I will be the first to actually get to use it. So looking forward to that too, because we're getting on that verge of starting to kick off Man Sends Out the Cast new episode. So we got to get to work.
Well, with that, let's switch over to that, Rich. Let's talk about your season, because you moved back to Wisconsin last year, if I'm not mistaken. It was probably shortly after the show last year. Is that right?
It was. And the reason I moved back, I mean, a lot of people looked at me and said, are you crazy? Look at the weather you have down in Florida. Look at the saltwater fishing you have. And, you know, that you're able to participate in. And actually, I came back because the hospitals in Florida basically felt that hospitals here in the Midwest were a better place and had more experience in a heart transplant. So at the present, they want to use a transplant as the last resort. And so they want to try stem cell. And that's something, of course, they never even talked about in Florida. I mean, there are good hospitals in Florida, but they told me, they said, look, we have a lot of old people down here, and we usually drum on medication, and they run their course. I mean, you know, you have a chance at having a transplant. So it only made sense for me to come back. I think I was blessed with the winter that we are having. It's allowing me to get used to the colder weather, you know, at my pace, because cold weather is not my friend. And when it comes to your heart, especially with your circulatory system. So I'm back in Wisconsin. And I think when something like this happens to somebody, you realize that there's a condition or that you have a chance of very limited days on the water. And one of the things that I've been doing is kind of reliving, going back to places that I fished 30 years ago and haven't been to since, because once I got into guiding, I was so busy. You just don't pick up and drive, you know, 6 hours to go fish somewhere, because it now becomes part of your living. I wasn't a weekend guide. That's what I did every day. So therefore, like you, Jeff, you know, you've got a couple irons in the fire of what you do. And that's what, you know, it amazes me. You've got so much energy. I don't even know how you keep up with everything you do. But I'm spending some time fishing in places that I haven't been to in a very long time. I know this coming fall, I'm going to go back down to Cave Run. I haven't been there for 40 years. And I've got some customers of mine that have been after me to, you know, go back fishing with. So we'll see how that goes, but it's only going to be a couple days a week. But the rest of the time I'm going to spend fishing with my wife. And, you know, I'd love to get in the boat with Brett. I think the man has put a lot of big fish in the boat, and I'd like to see what makes him pick.
I don't even know what to say. I mean, I don't know what makes me tick.
I was going to go with Copenhagen, Brad. That's what I was going to go with.
Well, that's a good source of energy.
I remember when you first brought Musky Mayhem to the market. And here's what I perceive. You're basically a very quiet and humble man is what I see. But I think you've put a lot of fish in the boat for customers, a big fish in the boat for customers and yourself. And I think you just are there and you enjoy what you're doing. And I'm kind of from the same, I feel the same way. I just, you know, I'm not on Facebook and flashing pictures. I mean, last year, you know, we did fairly well. I mean, musky fishing has not changed. The only thing that has changed is the weather, and weather controls everything, controls what a fish is going to do and the locations they're going to use and, you know, what kind of metabolism the fish is going to have, depending on the water temperature and the barometer. And we did really well. I mean, it actually kind of makes me nervous, because we had a better size average fish in the boat last year. I think the largest fish we had was a little over 48 inches, but we had some, you know, 45s, 47s, you know, back years ago, you know, there was a lot of fish in our lakes, and 36 to 40 inches was more comparable, you know, 30 years ago compared to today. We don't seem to be putting as many fish in the boat, but we're definitely putting larger fish in the boat. What makes me nervous is the size of the fish that we're seeing we're not seeing the smaller fish like we did back 30 years ago. So that kind of makes me scratch my head a little bit. So you know, I think stocking has been cut back in the state of Wisconsin, as it has in a lot of places. So I don't know what to quite make of that yet, but I know at this point in my life, I'm just going to keep pounding and I'm going to keep fishing and I'm going to keep burning up rabid girls. How's that?
I mean, I think that's great. One thing I will say, though, you mentioned the stocking in the state of Wisconsin. The one thing I have to wonder about is whether or not we need to vote on some sort of license fee increase. For my adult life, I've been married for 21 years, I believe it is now, 22 years. It might even be longer. I think, 22, it'll be going on 23, I believe, this year. And I don't recall ever paying more than like $39 for a husband and wife license. And so much like everything, right? If you go to the grocery store now, it's not the same as going to the grocery store 5 years ago. So let's just say it was $39 for my license. That $39 doesn't go as far as it used to. And so I think we need to look at things like that in order to give potentially more resources to, you know, to designate the stocking. I'm sure it doesn't cost the same to raise a muskie now as it did to raise a muskie 10 years ago. And so I think those are things we need to look at as well. And I mean, of course, my statement might be controversial, but everybody wants to point fingers in different areas. But I think that's one area that we should likely all agree on, is that they need more funding.
So let me interrupt though. I got to interrupt Jeff, because now he's kind of staying low and low out of the sight or vision of what a lot of people know. Team Rhino Outdoors donates. I don't know what you donate, Jeff, but you donate quite a bit of money when it comes to stocking fish, because you've been involved in that for quite a few years. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I do think that there's a private sector that does provide more of that stocking, and you're one of them with Team Rhino Outdoors. So I definitely think it's worth hearing about.
Well, I appreciate that, Brad. That's one thing we don't talk about a ton, but I would say, gosh, there's, I don't know, a handful of groups that we work with, and we literally cut checks right out of our profit for the year to these Muskies Inc. clubs or similar clubs, and we cut checks directly to them. The sole purpose, though, is it can't be used for like dock repairs. It can't be used for whatever. It literally needs to go to stocking. I don't personally belong to any Muskies Inc. group. I don't have any issues with them. In fact, in a lot of cases, these individual chapters do really, really good things. And so for me, it's twofold, right? Brad, I'm a muskie angler. So as a muskie angler, I want to preserve the fishery. And that is very important to me. For not only myself with the limited time I get on the water, but also for my children and my children's children and anybody else that wants to go muskie fishing. But it's also self-serving in a sense, right, Brad? It's good for business, right? More muskies in the water means that more people are catching muskies, which they need more gear and, you know, that kind of thing. So, like, yes, it's not 100% just goodwill, right, Brad? There is a method to the madness in a sense. I don't want to say like, hey, we're the greatest things ever, because that's what it is. It's a business transaction in a sense, but it's also because I have such passion for muskie fishing.
No, Jeff, I knew that. I've known for quite some time that you do that. And I do, you know, like Brad said, I commend you for that, you know, and you're exactly right. The private sector, I mean, you had mentioned that you cut checks out to various clubs, and you're exactly right. There's some clubs out there, they all, you know, to different degrees do some good things. I mean, we just cut a check, you know, the Wisconsin Muskie Expo just gave $500 to the Consolidated Muskie Club in Wisconsin Rapids. If you look at their record, they've got a layout, a scheduled layout for the next 10 years of where they're stocking fish in 4 to 5 bodies of water. And nobody knows about Consolidated, but every year this group of fishermen get together and they probably dump 1,800 fish a year, and yet nobody knows about Consolidated Muskie Club.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them out there that do a lot of good work, and then out there always, you know, patting their chests or whatever, but there's a lot of them out there that do a lot of good work. I know, I don't want to name specific clubs, but there's a bunch of them that we work with, and they all get literally checks cut right out of the business. I don't know what our total is, but if I had to guess, it's not hundreds, it's thousands of dollars that we spend annually to give back to the fisheries. And now we can only do so much, right? I'd love to help everybody out. But in some cases, you know, clubs will come to us looking for donations. And because there's so many donations now, I usually require the club to make some sort of monetary amount back to me. You know, hey, you give me a couple $100 and we'll get you well more than a couple $100 worth of your stuff. And I'm assuming it works for the clubs because they continue to come back. If they felt like it wasn't a good deal for them, they wouldn't. So those are other ways that we try to contribute too. But, you know, Brad, I do appreciate you jumping in there, but I didn't want to make this about us because that's not something that I talk about a ton. I have talked about it on the podcast before, but it's not something I want to talk about a ton because, like I said, it's not 100% from the goodness of my heart. It is, but it isn't, right? It's still a good business decision.
You amaze me, Jeff. I mean, go ahead, Brad.
Well, it is. It's amazing, and you're not the only one that's providing that kind of dollars. And I do think, you know, as a Muskie industry, I think we'd all be willing to do that. And unfortunately, here in the state of Minnesota, our DNR won't take money for just feeding baby Muskies. You know, they won't buy minnows with our money. It's like an act of Congress to try to get it done. And literally, it is an act of Congress because you're battling the political realm more so than the DNR. The DNR wants the support, and unfortunately, it's not provided. And I don't mean to go off on a whole tangent, but I just wanted people to understand, Jeff, what you do for the community and the state of Wisconsin. And, man, people should be aware of that and just know that you are providing back to the resource.
And I very much appreciate that, Brad, like very much. And like I said, we enjoy doing it. It's something I don't dread cutting those checks. I like cutting those checks. In a lot of cases, if you watch our YouTube stuff, many of the clubs have invited us out to film it while we stock the Muskies, and my kids look forward to doing it too. It's fun to give back to the resource. I like doing it because I don't get the Muskie fish nearly as much as I used to. We've talked about it on the podcast a million times. If you want a surefire way to cut your fishing time in, you know, just go get involved in the fishing industry, right? If you want to run a successful business within the fishing industry, you run it during the time where everybody's out fishing, or your business doesn't succeed as much, or I guess you could hire a bunch of employees, but that's clearly not the case with us, you know? So it's just one of those things. I like giving back. It's fun. And hopefully someday I get to reap the rewards of it, because I know right now I'm definitely not doing it. You know, I can, Madison, for example, they're one that we've donated religiously for a good handful of years. I almost never fish the Madison change. So every muskie that we went down there is helping out them. I so very rarely take advantage of the muskie fishing down in Madison, but it's something we continue to do as long as we get the continual support from our customers. Because quite honestly, if they weren't shopping with us, we wouldn't have the resources to be able to do that. And so for that, we thank you all for your support of our business. Truly appreciate it.
Well, you know what? And you know what? You do a lot more than a lot of people realize. You know, the way you run your business, Jeff, you know, like you're donating, okay? But you do so much more to help so many other people. I think, you know, when I look at the way you run Team Rhino, it's very impressive. I think some other places could take lessons, because it's probably one of the finest run businesses I've seen in this industry. And I've done this in the fishing industry. I've worked with for 46 years, and you run a very clean business, very organized business.
Well, we do appreciate that. You know, obviously you've been around, so you've seen a bunch, and we certainly try to avoid drama where we can, even though, like I've said it recently, you know, the higher you climb the mountain, the more stuff there is to deal with that you don't necessarily want to deal with as far as that stuff. You know, the things can get a little bit uglier, I guess I would say, to just be polite about things. But it's not all fun and games that way. We continue to just charge forward, paying attention to things that we can control. And we can't control what other people do or say to try to affect us negatively. And so we'll let our actions speak for themselves and move forward.
You definitely do that. Brad, you made a comment about, you know, the DNR, how everybody goes after the DNR. And you're exactly right, you know, about this. You know, people beat on the DNR, but people need to understand one thing. The DNR is controlled by the state government. So when people are getting on the DNR about not doing certain things, they really need to look towards the politicians, because the politicians seem to control what the DNR does.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Rich. And it's a confusing battle, right? So, you know, there's different committees and things that the public can be involved in, but unfortunately, that's kind of a revolving door. So most of those individuals disappear after 2 years. And man, it's just a vicious circle. I don't know. I mean, that's a whole nother podcast, right? But I mean, for today, I definitely think, you know, want to thank you for what you're doing. And I do think that there's room to have that discussion in another time frame, that's for sure.
Well, no doubt about it. Here's the thing. I'm in my 60s now, you know, and I've seen a lot of things change. And a lot of people, the younger generation looks today at what they're dealing with today. But what they don't realize that you've got to look past, you know, in the back in the history of what things were. And I can honestly say that I feel that years ago, we had bigger fish, we had more fish. And I would like to see that, you know, for, you know, the younger generation. But the younger generation have got to understand that there's an issue before it can be fixed. And the other thing is, I wish these clubs will start unifying and getting together, because, you know, crowds of people, lots of people have more voice than stagnant individuals around the area. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I won't disagree with that whatsoever, Rich. I mean, we all know the power of the people, right? So, you know, get involved. And yes, you're going to run into some roadblocks. Yes, it's going to be kind of detrimental to your brain set, right? But at the end of the day, the only way we're going to go forward is to unify, like you said, and fight and try to make this thing work. And I'm not saying fist fight. I'm saying fight for our rights.
Right.
And there's definitely ways to make some of that come together. And I know there's a ton of people out there putting that effort forward. So we need to support those people that have put a bunch of time in. I can tell you a bunch of different individuals throughout the state of Minnesota. I'm not as familiar with the Wisconsin side, but some of these individuals have given 15 years of their life to try to make things better for the muskie fishing, and not only muskies, but all of angling. And I think about it and I go, man, you know, you guys are, you're standing at the forefront of this by yourself. And, you know, passionate as we are about angling, whether it be muskies or any other species, we should be there to help support them as well. So figure out, you know, through the clubs or whoever these individuals might be, and if people are interested in it, you know, come see me at the show or whatever, or contact me, and I can definitely point them in some directions. And I know I've been spending some time talking to Jeremy Smith from Linder Media. And Jeremy is one of those passionate people that is really, really starting to put some stuff together. And at some point, maybe we can have him on the podcast to discuss some of this. But, you know, there's round tables here in the state of Minnesota. He's trying to get involved in that. And we're trying to figure out a way on the political realm to better the fishing world. So definitely things that are happening right now. Some may be aware of that, some may not, but hopefully they're aware now. So,
one of the things that Jeff had started when he said, you know, he talked about fishing licenses, and he is exactly right. You know, when you look at the price of a fishing license in the state of Wisconsin, it hasn't gone up for years. It should be double the cost. I know people would frown and go and poo-poo me for saying that, but you know what? They can't be working. You know, everything else has gone up. They can't be working on the same money that they were getting 20 years ago. And, you know, that's part of the problem. They say they have no money, okay? And I believe that. But they've got to see an increase in fishing license, you know, that goes to fishing, not general fund, not the roads, you know, not their own special interests, but to, you know, to fishing license need to go towards fishing. And Jeff hit the nail on the head. We need an increase. They got to have money to operate under.
Yeah, that's definitely, I mean, that's the first step, right? More funds means that there's more likelihood for more fish to be placed within the states. That moving forward is, in my opinion, that should be priority number one. And I know I had a handful of people come up to me in Milwaukee, and the subject of stocking came up, and I said, that needs to be, as muskie anglers, if we want to push for one thing, we need to start looking at getting more funds. And like you said, the license fee increase, it really should be double. Like if you take your wife out to dinner, you will not spend $80 and that'll be one dinner. Whereas if you go and you buy a husband wife license and it's now $39 and it was $80 down, you know, in whenever they could implement it, that's still very cheap entertainment for an entire year. And that comes with the abilities to keep fish within your daily bag limits and your possession limits. I mean, it's not just the fun that you get to go do it. If you're into keeping fish, walleyes, panfish, crappies, whatever, like you can do that all with that license. And I still feel it's a very cheap form of entertainment. And so that's the next push. If muskie anglers need to unite and think about that, that's, in my opinion, that's where you got to start with.
No, I agree with that. I came back here, and when you're down in Florida, you know, you're fishing for big bass. Yeah, we're fishing for saltwater, and you realize what they have. And, you know, when you look at the fishing up here, without a doubt, I enjoyed fishing down in Florida. But fishing in Florida is like work. When you go out and you catch a 450-pound Goliath, that isn't fishing. That is plain workout. You know, that will burn you out. You know, it'll take you 2 hours to recover after fighting that fish. And, you know, whereas here, this is home to me. I mean, when you look at everything that Wisconsin, Minnesota has to offer, you have so many species to fish for and so much to look forward to. I think we need to do a better job of taking care of it, without a doubt.
All right. Well, Rich, we kind of definitely did not. That was not a planned section for our podcast this afternoon. Let's talk, because we're going to end up running short on time here. Let's talk about baits for a minute, you know, and what you've seen and even what you've experienced over the course of the last, you know, 55 years. I get asked it, you know, if you're going to start out muskie fishing, what are three baits that you have to have? And I have my three baits, but I'm just curious, what are three baits that you feel like you would have to have?
That I have to have, it would be definitely a bucktail of some type. As I mentioned before, you know, I make an ambush. Actually, I don't. Big Guy Baits makes the ambush now for me, just because of my circulation. You know, there's three different, when you say categories of baits, I would love to have a rabbit girl. Always have a rabbit girl for my shallow water work. And I would use my own bucktail, you know, for medium. And, you know, medium, you know, depth, you know, water when I'm, you know, searching for fish. The second bait that I would definitely have to have would be probably a minnow bait. Of any one bait in my boat that has produced more fish for clients and myself, it would be minnow baits. And probably the third bait I would have would be a glider of some type, because a glider, you know, here's the key thing about baits that people got to think about. Fish only know three different, you know, I don't want to say the word mood, but they know active, neutral, inactive. People talk about fish, seeing fish follow up to the boat. I believe fish follow because you're not putting the bait in the strike zone. So when I'm throwing a bucktail, I'm covering active fish. I'm moving, you know, through a lot of water. I'm searching for fish, whether it be shallow or medium depth. A minnow bait is a bait that I can use for neutral fish. You can twitch it. You can rip it. You know, you can do a lot of things with a minnow bait. And then lastly, with a glider, you take, say, like Chaos Tackle. They make a bait called a blunt nose. You can let that bait sink down and work that bait ever so slowly and put that bait in the fish's face. So if I only had three baits, it would be a bucktail, a minnow bait, and a glider.
That's interesting. I always find the minnow bait one to be interesting, mostly because the fact that I never throw them, ever. It's been a handful of years. I think about it all the time. I should really learn to use one for either twitching or ripping, or however you want to work it. And I still never do. It's never something that I pull out of the box really often. And it's, I'm sure I'm missing fish because of it. I'm guaranteed there's certain situations where it would absolutely trigger a fish.
The reason I say a minnow bait, because the people that I take out fishing, they can't fish it wrong. You know, there's so many people, you know, especially newer people, they can't work, you know, say a dive and rise. They can't maybe work that glider. Whereas in a minnow bait, you can do so much and, you know, the fish will respond to it. And they, you know, of any one bait in my boat, minnow bait and bucktail probably catch more fish than all baits combined. You know, gliders, I mean, I love a suic. Suics have put a lot of fish in the boat for me, you know, through the years. But a glider, I can do, they're so universal. They're so versatile. I can do so much. I can work a glider fast. I can work it really slow. I mean, it just, you know, people talk about size of baits and they have different favorites. Whatever baits you choose, that bait has got to be in the strike zone. It's got to be in the strike zone. And I find by doing so, we end up with less follows and more fish that are striking. And I've kind of lived by that for many, many years. I think when I moved to Florida, there were so many things through the course of years. It's experience, it's time on the water. It doesn't mean you're the greatest or the best. What it means is you put a lot of time and effort, you know, and, you know, hours of learning different things as to how to make fish respond. And I think more fishermen should pay attention to, you know, the strike zone and how they're going to keep those baits in the strike zone. Not the size of bait, not the size of our equipment, but keeping that bait in the strike zone of those fish where they'll get more striking fish than they will get follow-ups. And those three baits do that very well.
That's funny. You mentioned a minnow bait and you can't work it wrong. I think that's the reason I don't throw it more. I don't know if I should be straight cranking it. I don't know if I should be twitching it. I don't know how long I should be pausing it. It's a confidence thing. I'm sure once you catch a couple on them, then you just keep doing it. But for me, it always feels like I'm working it wrong regardless of how I'm working it.
Well, that's the thing. You can't fish it wrong. You know, you get a chance. I know you're a very busy man throughout the season. You've got kids. I know you spend tremendous amount of time with your kids. You know, you've got, you know, some very demanding responsibilities in your company that you run. But if you have some time this summer, maybe late summer, early fall, and you want to come fishing with me for a day, we'll put some minnow baits to work and we'll let you, you know, judge from there and see what you think, you know. But you know, when I look at fishing, I look at active, neutral, inactive, and that controls the strike zone to those fish. Depending on the body of water that you're fishing, a strike, you know, let's say if you're throwing a bucktail and you're burning a bucktail, and in my case, I fish brown water. So the strike zone might be, you know, maybe, you know, say 7 to 10 feet where a fish will move to go get a bait. But then say if the fish are neutral, it'll be half that strike zone. It'll be, instead of being, you know, 7 to 10, it'll be maybe, you know, 4 to 5 feet or whatever. And then, of course, if the fish are inactive, it's basically almost like 12 inches. You got to put the bait in the face. I had a huge aquarium in my house for many years, and I used to watch how muskies, those little muskies would respond to the bait, you know, to the minnows that we put in the tank. And that tells, that spells out a very clear picture as to the three, you know, common, you know, situations fish are going to be into. And what controls that is the barometric pressure. And that's really what it boils down to, as to what the fish are going to do. So, you know, when it comes to bucktails, they're nothing, they're tools. I have certain baits I like shallow, you know, like a rabbit girl. I love my ambushes. Those are the main bucktails. There's a bucktail that's coming to the show that you might want to check out, Jeff. It's called a Huntsie Tail. And it's made by Kyle Hunsader. He's got a booth at the show there this year. Man, you talk about a noisy, hard banging, you know, tail. That's it. It's definitely different than anything else that's out there. So you might want to check that out. But that's another bait I've been playing with here. But the workhorses and bucktails in my boat are the rabbit girl and the ambush. Those are the two that are important to me that do the job. You know?
Not to drag this on too much longer, but Rich, I was literally just going through your website and I pulled up one called a lasso lure. It's a bucktail. It reminds me of a Slippery Sam. Are you familiar with this bait? Like the Slippery Sam was the very first muskie I ever caught was on a Slippery Sam. It's a bucktail with like a creature like tail kind of, you know. And these things here, they got one called an arm jerker. It looks like a Slippery Sam. It's interesting. I hadn't seen a Slippery Sam since I believe the owner passed away, and these look similar.
Well, the owner used to be, his name was Don Pesca, and he owned Super Slater Tackle Company. And he, of course, he was out of Wausau. And he was very close with Fresh Mullins. And I think at one point, you know, Don had entertained of selling the company to Crash at one point. And, you know, I don't know what happened there. He passed away. But essentially, the same thing happened to Crash. Crash had cancer. He passed away. Matt Blackburn, who owns Crash's Landing, also owns Lasso Lures. And you're exactly right. It is a slippery Sam, is what it is. And I would almost say that it's built of maybe a bit better quality. It's got more combinations. He's got tinsel as well as rubber, as the slippery Sam always had. And, you know, there's another company you might want to check out. It's an awesome bait. I've thrown them, I fished them, they work well. There's a handful of people here in Wisconsin that know about them, but he has basically brought back the slippery Sam, and that bait has caught so many fish in this state. And then, of course, when Don passed away, they kind of got lost.
Yeah, interesting. So, I didn't know the backstory there, but yeah, that's pretty cool. So, Rich.
Well,
I want to thank you for your time. We're about out of time. We could certainly have you back on this summer as you're on the water, and we could, you know, we don't have to do updates always right before the show. We could do this at any point in the season. But I want to thank you for your time. If anybody's looking to come and see me and Brad, we're going to be at the Minnesota Muskie Expo. That'd be March 8th, 9th, and 10th. So when you hear this episode, we're literally going to be hitting the road that same day. I leave on Wednesday. We head to Minnesota a day early. And so March 8th, 9th, and 10th, we'll be in Minnesota. And then, Rich, your show is the week after, 15th, 16th, 17th in Wausau. I will be there. Rich will be there. Brad, he's too cool to be there. So he's going to be drinking beer, celebrating that show season's over. But we have one more weekend to do it, 15th, 16th, and 17th. So, Rich, as always, I want to thank you for your time. We very much appreciate you coming out. Is there anything else that you need to mention?
I appreciate you. I appreciate what you do out here, you know, in the business that you're in and what you do for the fisheries. If you want to ever come, you know, share the boat, you're more than welcome. Let me know. We'll get you out. You know, we could go play with some baits, you know, whatever. Brad, I think it would be very interesting and a good time to get on the water with you sometime.
I truly appreciate that, Rich, and we will try to see if we can make something happen at one point.
What I would like to do sometime is talk to you. I've got some ideas on a few new colors for that rabid girl I'd like to see you implement. And if I know why you can't do the Wisconsin Muskie Expo. I thoroughly understand that, you know, working within this business. But I would love to, you know, even if you came down for the day, you know, and smiled on everybody, blessed everybody with your presence at the Wisconsin Muskie Expo. That would be great.
Well, I said it last year to Jeff that the potential was there that maybe I would come over on a Saturday and then we would do that podcast, or maybe the Friday or whatever. But I believe I am going to leave like 2 days after the Minnesota show to go down to PA, Ohio, West Virginia, somewhere down there and do some fishing. So if that changes, the potential is maybe I'll swing over there.
I hope it snows down there.
Well, it has been. I think it's been colder down there than it has been here in Wisconsin and Minnesota. So who knows? I mean, the weather has been pretty strange across the country.
Yes, it has. It's getting to be a little more intense, I think. And it'll be interesting how the season fares. But you know what? We're going to be out there and we're going to figure it out and we're going to know what it's going to be, because we're going to be out there pounding on that water. We're going to put our time in.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Rich, once again, I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in for another episode. And don't forget, March 8th, 9th, and 10th, that's this weekend after you hear this episode, we're going to be in Minnesota. Weekend after, we're going to be in Wausau, 15th, 16th, and 17th. Make sure you stop out and see us. That's it. As fast as show season showed up, it's gone just like that. Come out and see us, and we appreciate everybody's support this season. And we'll be back with another episode next week. This time, it'll be the live episode from the Minnesota show. So Friday night at the Minnesota show, stop on out and check that out. And then we'll do the same thing Friday night at the Wausau show. We'll do the podcast there. Rich, coincidentally, I think somebody asked me, they're like, I want to have a round table with Rich. And there was two other guides. One of them was Dick Pearson. which he's not going to be there. But there's one other guy, and I got to figure out who it was. And you're going to be there. That other person's going to be there as well. So I think we're going to have to get you in on that round table on Friday night.
Well, I'll be glad to do it. I have the time. We got Mike Ketzel, who runs the day-to-day operations of the show now. I'm there, so I can definitely, that would be great. I'll enjoy doing it.
All right. Stop out at Team Rhino Outdoors booth at the Milwaukee Muskie Expo on Friday night. We'll get that round table going with a group of guys from Northern Wisconsin. I do need to look up that message I got, though, Rich. It was you and somebody else. But anyways, we'll get on with our days. I want to thank everybody again, and we'll see everybody at these expos coming up. And thanks again for the support.
Thank you.